I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices with beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale.
Right.
Let's roll. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morenci, the Pips, the Players, the Hustlers, the podcasters, the people that bust them, and everybody else in between. Let's do this thing. The Twisted Tuesday has begun, as it feels like the Game 3 of the World Series just ended a couple of minutes ago, an epic marathon that, man, I'm tired and I'm on the West Coast. So I imagine, especially people in Toronto, you poor bastards, like, it's your team in the World Series. The game literally went to like 3:15, 3:20 in the morning or something like that. There were actually people watching it at the Rogers Centre in Toronto at a viewing party. And, of course, the Dodgers end up winning 6-5, complete marathon. It was a sports equinox on Monday night with all the sports leagues in action, NBA, NHL, NFL. And there was even MLS playoff games going on. In the NFL normally, like, you know, rules the world and all that, and, you know, has the highest numbers and the highest ratings, but kind of an anticlimactic Monday Night Football game. Kansas City Chiefs win again, and now the Chiefs have a big showdown with the Buffalo Bills this week. Let's bring in Rick Saratel, allaccessfootball.com, NFL Draft Bible. Rick, good to see you. A lot of stuff going on in the football world as we approach the halfway point of the National Football League season. The coaching bloodbath continues in the college football world. And the CFL playoffs set to begin this weekend.
Yeah, great time of the calendar, Gabriel Morenci. Always happy to be here on a Tuesday. And I'll tell you, another week, another head coach fired, another $54 million payout. I mean, it just never ends.
And now the stories are coming out as far as Brian Kelly is concerned. You know, Rick, sometimes coaches get fired and the word is after, listen, he's a good guy. It just wasn't working out. We wish it would have worked out. That's not really the case with Brian Kelly. And it's already Kieran Lacy's family is now saying that, yeah, you know what? He never even called us after Lacy died. They never even reached out. That, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, have never thought very much of Brian Kelly as the person. They kind of think he's a good football coach, but it eventually all catches up to you. Like, they kind of like cross over together, don't they? And the guy's just not a people person. Let's call it out for what it is. So they threw him under the bus pretty quickly.
Well, you know, I think we saw the first day of the press conference when he came out with the bootleg accent. We all were watching it saying, oh, my God, like, what is this? What is this guy doing? He's a fake phony. And I think LSU at that moment in time was having second thoughts. And they're like, hey, well, we already made our bed. Now we got to lay in it. And, you know, there's a lot of expectations at LSU. He hasn't been able to win. Now they've lost to teams that they should have beaten. And so another head coach's history. And the interesting thing here is, will they dip back to the Notre Dame wishing well? I mean, Marcus Freeman's a hot name. Would they dare to go back to Notre Dame and get the guy they should have plucked the first time?
Marcus Freeman would actually be a perfect fit in Baton Rouge. Speaking of, he's the complete opposite of Brian Kelly, right? Players love him. Everybody loves him. Parents love him. Anybody that meets Marcus Freeman likes him and says, oh, I want to play for this guy. Look at Notre Dame, man. Like, look at Notre Dame, how successful they've been. I know they lost the first two early games this year, but just sort of modernizing the program, Rick, in which, you know, with Brian Kelly there before and Notre Dame, they used to sell the Rudy stuff and the win one for the Gipper. You know what I mean? And we're Notre Dame and we're this old school traditional program when, quite frankly, a couple of grandfathers cared and stuff, but no kids cared about Notre Dame tradition anymore. He modernized it and has put a modern Notre Dame program on the field, right? They're not living in the past, this school now.
Well, and I think you've got to adapt to the modern day college football landscape, because tradition isn't going to win over any recruit in 2025. Like, you better have some NIL money laying around. And the other interesting thing is Marcus Freeman, from what I hear, the NFL has shown some interest in Marcus Freeman. And so I think now you think of Matt Rhule, you think of some of the college football head coaches that didn't work out. And word on the street is we're far enough removed now where an NFL owner might dip back into that college football head coaching pool, and Marcus Freeman is at the top of the list.
You know what a big thing is, Rick, and I've been talking about this, and I don't know what your thoughts are, but there are more teams right now, and especially in college, and, you know, we'll see it in the NFL when it's all said and done, but, like, there are more teams in college and more high-profile jobs out there available than there are really coaches to hire. Like, you have a lot of, you know, you have a lot of programs firing coaches. It's like, okay, who are you going to hire now? And it's not as easy just to, okay, like, you think, okay, we're going to buy out this coach, and he's going to want, you know, you get the coach is going to have to want to actually come and leave a school. Like, if I was Marcus Freeman, I wouldn't leave Notre Dame for LSU. Like, why? What's the point? Like, there's a ton of pressure. You're going, you have it good in Notre Dame right now. You have your own effing network, right? You know, you run basically things. You're on NBC all the time. You don't play in a conference, so your schedule is, you know, it's not easy, but you're not stuck playing the same teams all the time, whether you like it or not, that are really good in, you know, in a Big Ten or in the SEC, et cetera. I don't see any reason why Freeman would want to leave for Baton Rouge.
Well, I guess it depends on how many zeros are on the end of that check,
besides,
right?
Money, right? money is the, yeah.
If it's a $54 million buyout, well, what are they paying the next head coach to come in there? Right.
They go with the flash there, right? I mean, every program that they have, they're spending money. It's amazing the buyout money that's going through, that's getting thrown around out there right now. You know, they're just unable to ever put it together. So as I stated, Kieran Lacy's father says Brian Kelly never reached out after his son's death, supports interim coach Frank Wilson. Said Wilson did reach out, actually. Lacey's father, this dude actually came and sat down with our family and showed us some real genuine love. Speaking of Wilson, when my son died, along with a couple other coaches, I didn't even get a call or a text from that dude in the back. Must be nice to get paid millions to get your walking papers. Let's get it done, Coach Frank. So it hasn't taken long for the shots to, you know, to be fired, right now yet. You know, they're in a tough spot. I mean, I know, I get it, Rick. It's LSU. Put it this way. I think LSU is the better job than Florida is. So I think they have, like, you know, they have a better puncher's chance of getting someone than the Gators do. But it's, you know, they're going to have to pay people. And I bring up the same damn name every week. I'm not saying Gruden to LSU, but Gruden's got to land somewhere with all these jobs available, Rick.
Yeah, and I saw him talking about that, and somebody asked him, would you rather be an NFL coordinator or a college football head coach? And I think it was on the Barstool Network. And he said, you know, I want to be a head coach. I've been preparing. I think you mentioned last week he's studying film in the dark around the clock, and he's just ready for that head coaching opportunity. So whether it's the NFL or college, you know, Lane Kiffin seems to be the guy everybody wants to go after. But unless it's Alabama, I hear Kiffin isn't going anywhere. And so, again, to your point, like, all these big, high-profile jobs, where's the head coaches coming from? Who are you going to pluck?
Yeah, you know, it's always easier, the grass, exactly. If you're going to always say it, if you're going to run, you better know where you're running to, and a lot of these programs don't. This is interesting as far as the Texas Longhorns are concerned. What do you think of the Arch Manning season that is transpiring here? And now they're actually legitimately discussing starting Matthew Caldwell, a quarterback in Austin right now.
Yeah, well, I know Manning got hurt last week at the end of the game there, but it's been a brutal watch. Like, every week I tune into these Longhorns. I'm just waiting for Manning to turn the corner, show us what we've all been waiting. And the flashes have been there, but it just hasn't accelerated like we thought it would. And so, you know, it's hard to justify him being a top overall prospect. He certainly needs to come back to school. You wonder if that's going to be at Texas next year. But you talk about, you know, a lot of times these touted quarterbacks, whether it be Caleb Williams or Andrew Luck or even Trevor Lawrence, like, usually they pan out in some way, shape, or form. Here we are now, almost 3 months into the season, and we just haven't seen it from Arch Manning. And I don't know what his status is going to be with at the health issue, but maybe that's a reason to just sit him down for a week.
Well, that's the thing, too, that he might, you know, might be best to just sort of get a break, except he actually played pretty well against Mississippi State, right? So he did start to put some things together. I just think, listen, I don't think he's going to – I don't know. I'm not saying he's a bust in the future. People overreact too quickly, but people were, like, you know, 100% overhyped him. Like, you know, look at Underwood. There was a lot of hype about Underwood, and there's been some raw moments and stuff, but you also see the progress, right, on a weekly basis and all the things that he does well. So as you stated, like, the progress wasn't there as much with Arch Manning as you would have liked. Right.
No, and you look at Ty Simpson in Alabama. He sat behind a couple years and got a first-year starter, and he's playing lights out, right? He's doing everything Arch Manning should have done. Dante Moore is another guy. So you can say, hey, well, he's a first-year starter. He needs live bullets. He's got to get some experience under the belt. But it's not an issue for any of those other quarterbacks. And we just talked about college football. I mean, this is – we talked about the NFL not for long. I mean, the patience span in college football is actually shorter than the NFL. So if you don't produce, well, guess what? They're going to go get the next guy. They're going to go find the next portal quarterback. And, you know, Arch Manning right now, I think he needs to save face here down the stretch and just prove that he could be the Longhorn starter in 2026.
It's a good point that, in you know, in the NFL, they don't have anyone to replace you with. In college, they do, right? In college, there's always the next blue chip. There's always the prospect. There's always the kid that's already been on the roster, like the college, you know what I mean? There's always a guy that's already been there for a little while. So you're right. There's a quicker trigger finger in college football. But we always tell you guys, and me and Rick talk about the draft every week, you know, all year, we always tell you guys that, they, you know, this market is crazy. And it's really funny because we hear people, oh, teams are going to tank for Arch Manning. So, and Arch Manning was actually the projected number one pick in the NFL draft, believe it or not. It was like plus 200 and, you know, plus 300. It was insane. Arch Manning's now 50-1 to be the number one pick in the NFL draft. 50-1. And the name that Rick just mentioned, Ty Simpson, has taken over as the new favorite to be the number one pick. Wow. It's a fickle market. Mendoza's right there, but Mendoza's been the favorite for the last couple of weeks. But now Simpson, all the way up to plus 200. So Simpson is plus 200, number one pick in the NFL draft. Mendoza, plus 220. Lenora Sellers is holding strong despite South Carolina's struggles at plus 650. Reuben Bain, 750. Dante Moore, 800. Garrett Nussmeier, 22-1. Jordan Maiva, 28-1. So I'm not saying it's the NFL saying this, Rick, but the sports books now have Ty Simpson as the top pick.
Well, it's interesting. And if you look back at the history of 1 year starters at the collegiate level, they almost never work out. Right. And so that's my concern there with Ty Simpson. But when you look at the resume, the body of work, this guy's throwing lasers. He's cool as a cucumber in the pocket. He's got tremendous poise, can extend plays, throw on the run. He's been accurate as hell. I think he's got one interception all season. It's just remarkable how efficient he's been. So, I mean, there's a lot to like, but you got to keep that in mind. Like, you know, history has shown us something. And what does that mean when it comes to your draft stock? Now, Reuben Bain is the best player in college football, pound for pound. And you've got scouts now even talking about his ceiling might be higher than Abdul Carter Jr. But when you're picking atop the draft and you look at the teams up top right now, well, they stink because they don't have a quarterback, right? And so when you're in position to select the best signal caller, whether there's a true franchise quarterback or not, and I'm not sure there is, quite frankly, but you're almost forced to do something, and the new CBA makes it affordable. So if it's a first-round bust, it's not a Jamarcus Russell situation where it sets you back 5-10 years. You got to roll the dice, but you got to hit it.
Rick Saratella in the house with us. Cam Stewart steps up and in as well. Andrew McKinnis will be joining us in a couple of minutes. So let's get into the CFL playoffs. So Rick, of course, worked with the Edmonton Elks in the CFL. Edmonton fell short of making the playoffs, but did improve themselves this year. So the CFL bracket is set, and we had a crossover this year with a team from the West playing in the East. We could debate whether we should move forward and throw up the crossover and like even just throw up the divisions, actually, the East-West stuff, which I don't think is a crazy idea. I think it's something, you know, it's a topic, it's a conversation worth having of just sort of redoing it. But they're scared. They never want to do that. It's been brought up in the past, but they never want to do that because they're scared that basically all the playoff teams will be from the West. Right, that the West just has always been better than the East for, you know, for the most part. I mean, you've had championship teams in the East, but overall, for the most part, historically in the CFL, the West has been a lot better than the East and more stable as far as ticket sales, etc., which means they've had more money to spend on players, and so it sort of goes hand in hand. Cam, how you doing this morning after a very long baseball game last night on the East Coast?
I got to tell you, Morenci, I'm like, is this some kind of Twilight Zone episode? But the worst is when you put that time in and your team loses. Really proud of the Blue Jays with Eric Lauer. But, you know, you see Ohtani. I told people, don't poke the bear. And the bear went bananas last night. And Freddie Freeman, the man with Canadian ties, beating Canada's team. It was a great game, Gabe. It was epic. That's World Series history right now. And concerning for the Blue Jays, how's George Springer doing? That's not an injury that you can just shake off. He's probably going to be done for tonight. I don't know how long. I'm not a doctor, but it didn't look good.
They said after the game, and I don't have any new updates from last night, but Schneider, I watched the press conference after the game last night, and Schneider didn't really seem to be too optimistic about Springer. He said, I don't know. He goes, it's a good thing I took him out of the game when he did. He's injured. He said he's already gone for an MRI right now. It sucks. We'll see tomorrow. Right? So I don't know. I don't think Springer's going to be able to go. And Alejandro Kirk sort of limped off the field last night, yes, a little bit too, which that's something to keep your eye on. Listen, you can't live in the past, and it was a great game. It is what it is. Yet I do think that the Blue Jays and Schneider, for whatever reason, they overmanaged. They kept on like pinch running for people, and like they acted like it was a regular season game. They started taking guys out of the game in like the eighth inning and stuff, and they didn't like have the seventh inning, and they didn't have the foresight to think, you know what, this could go extra innings, like. Maybe we shouldn't take Bichette out of the game. Maybe, like, we shouldn't take Kirk. Now, I think Kirk hurt himself, and he took himself out. It was bizarro world. Springer got hurt. But there was no reason to, you know, you're pinch running for people all the time. It's like, what the hell would you take Addison Barger out of the game for, to pinch run for him on first base? Like, by the time we got to the 12th and 13th and 14th innings and stuff, it was basically the Dundee and Blue Jays out there. Like, they had, like, it was, like, scrub central because they used all their players. And you'll notice the Dodgers didn't. Yep. Right? The Dodgers did not go to their bench. They just, you know what I mean? Their guys batted 9 times and stuff. And whatever. Schneider tried to get cute, and it kind of backfired on him a little bit. Yeah, listen, you know, it could have went either way the game. I get it. But I just thought that I think Schneider overmanaged, and they did too many replacements. And they basically ran out of players. But, all right, so as far as the CFL is concerned, Rick, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, you know, they're one of the powers, man. They've been the recent power in the CFL. Even though they've lost in the Grey Cup the last couple of times, they keep on getting there all the time. So they've been a mini dynasty. Let's call it out for what it is. Yet they're not the same team anymore. They're still good, but they're not the best. And they're going on the road right now. They got to go through the East Coast now to make it to the Grey Cup. Montreal are 6-point favorites. The total is 49.5. What's your pick, Rick? What do you think happens?
You know, I like Montreal at home here. Winnipeg has a nice veteran core team, but they're a little bit longer in the tooth. Give me Montreal and Davis Alexander at home to pull this one out.
Unbelievable that Davis Alexander and the run that he has been on. The Calgary Stampeders and the BC Lions. So this is an interesting one in that, of course, the quarterbacks are going head-to-head, right? Vernon Adams was on the BC Lions and playing well, but he got injured often, and there was a lack of consistency that the Lions, you know what I mean? And it's true. Like, we've seen this with Vernon Adams before, where he starts off the season awesome in the first half, and then reality starts to kick in a little bit. and or he gets injured because he's smaller. So BC thought, you know, he's good, but Nate Rourke is actually better. And Nate Rourke is Canadian, and you know what? We'll have the Canadian star and all that as our quarterback. So, I mean, this is head-to-head here right now when it matters the most, except these teams seem to be going in different directions right now, right? BC took a little while with Buck Pierce and a new coaching staff to figure it out, and they have figured it out. Meanwhile, Calgary were basically like, you know, 6-1 or whatever. Like, they came out like gangbusters this year, surprised everybody, but they have hit the wall as the season has gone on. What do you think, Rick, of the Stampeders and the Lions?
Well, yeah, I know they've hit a wall, but Calgary, what a Cinderella story to go from last place a year ago now to be licking their chops on this playoff.
Still a hell of a story, yeah.
And Vernon Adams, I think, is going to have a chip on his shoulder in this game. I think experience counts for something. So I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a high-scoring affair. But I'm going to go Vernon Adams and the Calgary Stampeders here on the road.
One thing I'll say about the BC Lions, they have been hot down the stretch, but I wasn't overly enthusiastic about seeing them play. Number one, Saskatchewan played their starters in the first half, which I was somewhat surprised about. You know, they didn't have to. They had the bye week, and, you know, they could have rested their guys, but they didn't. So they started Harris. They played Ouellette. They played everybody in the first half. But even in the second half, when the backups came in for the most part, they still had some starters out there. The Lions had a really hard time finishing them off. Like, this game, it could have won either way. Like, the Rough Riders backups nearly beat the Lions, and the Lions were playing for a home field. So, you know, I think the Lions beat Calgary personally, guys, but the Rough Riders just own the Lions. Like, the Lions can't beat Saskatchewan, and it's going to be frustrating for them unless they find a way. Cam, what's your picks for the Bombers, Alouettes, and the Stampeders and the Lions now?
Well, me, you, and Rick are all on the same side. I like the Montreal Alouettes at home, Gabe. I'm not sure about the spread, but they'll find a way. Winnipeg's battle-tested, but the thing about the Bombers is age is starting to catch up with this team. They can run the ball, but I expect Montreal at home to get it done in a pretty tight one. Other game, Gabe, I'm with BC. I have BC going to the Grey Cup against Montreal. I just think, I know Saskatchewan owns them. I get it. But I think the BC Lions, they can actually attack this defense. Saskatchewan hasn't been that impressive the last few weeks. I think BC can go in there, get it done, face Montreal in the Grey Cup. But I think Montreal will probably win the Grey Cup. That is my prediction.
Yeah, I've got Montreal playing Saskatchewan, Rick, in the Grey Cup. Montreal, like, Saskatchewan only needs to win one game, right? So they're going to get the winner of the Stampeders and the Lions. They're not unbeatable. I mean, BC or Calgary could beat them, but I'm not sure they will. So I'm going to say, and I think the Alouettes will beat the Alouettes will beat the Bombers, and I think the Alouettes will then go on the road and beat Hamilton to go to the Grey Cup. What do you think, Rick? Grey Cup matchup.
Well, I'm with Montreal. I think I'm going to stick with them to win the Grey Cup. Although Saskatchewan, I got to say, like, I know they've been resting their starters, only 4 wins in their last 9 games. Now they got a week off. I don't know. Like, these other teams are scrapping and clawing. I think Saskatchewan's going to have a big challenge getting up for next week's matchup. So, you know, I've got Calgary, but over BC this week. I guess I got Calgary over Saskatchewan next week and Montreal over Calgary in the Grey Cup.
Ooh, interesting.
Rick.
Interesting. Well, listen, the CFL, it does stand for Crazy Football League. We've seen crazy things happen in the past, in the playoffs. So anything can happen. It's true. Look, last year, me and Rick were at the Grey Cup, but we took the underdog. Everybody, Nick Arbuckle. Hey, yeah, well, how are they going to do without Nick Arbuckle? Rick took them to win the MVP. Cash a ticket. So, you know, like I said, anything can happen in the CFL playoffs. And teams can get hot. You don't have to get that hot. You got to win 2 games to get to the Grey Cup, right? And if you have home field, you only got to win 1 game to get to the Grey Cup. As far as the NFL is concerned, you know, college has been more entertaining this year. The NFL schedule has just been anticlimactic on a weekly basis. A lot of bad games, a lot of bad football, Rick. Let's just call it out for what it is. The quality of play in the NFL has not been very good this year.
Well, I think this past week was a reminder of how slew and slanted things can get. I think it's been pretty competitive up until the last week or two. But, I mean, college football, you don't need a college football playoff because the regular season essentially is a playoff, right? And each week these rankings change, teams get almost eliminated. You got teams like Texas and Penn State who are 1-2. They're not even in the top 25. Texas might be hanging on. So to me, the college football excitement and just the race, and every week is a different upset, a different storyline, where NFL, we kind of are seeing who's going to rise to the top for the most part. There's no clear-cut dominant team, but for the most part, we know who the contenders are going to be. And I think the college football landscape, especially Indiana, what an X factor. I mean, that team's as good as anybody. And so what a Big Ten championship game that could potentially be. Ohio State and Indiana, I don't think the NFL is going to have a game, maybe the Bills and Chiefs this week, but it's going to be hard to replicate that kind of excitement on a weekly basis. College football is just unpredictable.
Big college games this week. The Miami Hurricanes look to bounce back. So Miami are 6-1, not one loss. SMU already have 3 losses on the season. But this is still a dangerous game for Miami that could kind of really derail their season for real if they lose and they go to 2 losses. This weekend is Penn State, Ohio State. I mean, this was supposed to be one of those, wow, this is going to be an awesome game. Everyone looking forward to it. National championship implications, and now we have Ohio State as 20.5-point favorites. Vanderbilt, what do you think, Rick, of the Pavia story in Vanderbilt? I got to tell you, I'm on Missouri. I got Missouri over 6.5 wins. Missouri actually played better than Vanderbilt this game. I watched it. Like, they, quite frankly, dominated. Like, Pavia really didn't do much. The Missouri defense is really good. Like, they terrorized him, except it was one of those deals, man. Missouri, you know, Missouri went for it on the, you know, the goal line and got stuffed once. Missouri missed a chip shot field goal another time. And, like, we're talking about a game, guys. It was 3-3, and Missouri continuously kept on, like, moving the ball. Like, you know what I mean? It was 3-3. Missouri would get a stop, get the ball, move the ball down the field, miss the field goal. Missouri, Vanderbilt get the ball back. Missouri would get a stop again, move down the field, go for it on the 2-yard line and not get it. I swear Vanderbilt dodged a lot of bullets last week, but give them credit. They won. So you got Vanderbilt of Texas. But are you a Pavia fan, Rick?
Well, you know, listen, I think he's an outstanding collegiate quarterback, and the kid could be a star up north, quite frankly, in the CFL. I think he measured in at 5'9" and 6/8" in the spring, so he's under 5'10". I don't know how much of an NFL shot he's going to have, which is why I think he tried to apply for that 7th year of eligibility. But this is a tough Vanderbilt team. You can't let him hang around. And what a job Clark Lee has done, stockpiling the talent there. In Nashville, I was down there in training camp, and you could just sense a different kind of vibe around this team. They were all business. They've got a lot of seniors on this offense and defensive side of the ball. Not, I think 2 underclassmen actually only see playing time. So he's hit the portal. He's hit it hard. They've got a lot of resources there now in Vanderbilt. They've been known for academics. Now they're one of the best teams in the SEC. I wonder if Clark Lee starts getting some sniffs around one of these job openings.
I think the coach in New Mexico, I would steal him already. He went from Idaho to New Mexico, and I get it. It's not like massive program, but he can coach for real. Sometimes you got to be ahead of people on it. Now, you know, you look at it's amazing, like you said, how like this Penn State and Ohio State situation has played out. Yet, I don't think Julian Sain gets enough credit, Rick. Mm-hmm. The one thing as a Michigan fan that sort of scares me and bothers me about Ohio State this year, Will Howard, like, you know, is a game manager type thing. Good college quarterback, but a game manager. Like, in the past, you know, past few years, Ohio State have just sort of had okay quarterbacks. No one really talks about saying on Ohio State. They talk about Jeremiah Smith. We talk about the defense and stuff, but this kid throws some very impressive passes, like, into spaces where before the receivers are there. I saw him throw a touchdown last week, basically in a double coverage, man, but he put it right over their heads. Like, this kid's a quarterback, Rick. Like, he can really throw. This kid's accurate, Sue saying.
Yeah, he gets better by the week, doesn't he? And he just racks up big wins week after week, makes big plays, and I don't know why he's not talked about more.
Yeah.
I know he's in the contention with the Heisman Trophy.
But nobody talks about him, Rick, at all. But yet, you see the throws that he makes, he can really sling it.
Yeah, and I would say he's actually, at this stage of his career, further along than where C.J. Stroud was at Ohio State, and that's the kind of upside and potential he has. And I'll tell you what, like, I don't see Ohio State losing a game this year. Maybe once they get into the college football playoff, but they do the Heisman Trophy voting before then. So I don't understand how Julian Sain doesn't win the Heisman if Ohio State runs the table. Maybe Jeremiah Smith cancels that out a little bit, but Sain is really the straw that stirs the drink there.
So speaking of CFL quarterbacks, what are your thoughts, Rick, on Trinidad Chambliss at Ole Miss right now? Came from Ferris State, won a couple of championships there. A lot of people doubted him, but they're not doubting him anymore. I see he's listed at 6'1". I don't know if that's really true. I don't know if he looks that big, but they list him at 6'1", like 200 type thing, 205, I think. Just his sort of style. I looked at him, and one of the first things I thought, I was like, wow, if I was a CFL team, I'd be taking a look at this kid. It turns out the Rough Riders did. So the Rough Riders did, like, tag his name for their negotiation list. So credit to Saskatchewan for having a quick eye. And they did it before the year started, actually, guys. They did it, like, you know, September 15th they did this. So pretty good eye, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. But, you know, Twitter, people are always talking, oh, NFL. But what are your thoughts? Still a lot of real estate left for Chambliss. He's only started a few games. But what do you think of Trinidad Chambliss moving forward?
Yeah, well, you mentioned the height. I have him listed at 5'11", right around 200 pounds. You know, he's got a little Russell Wilson to his game. He can throw on the run. He's a smart quarterback, very cerebral, accurate, been making plays. Came out of nowhere, right? Like, nobody had this kid on the radar at all, but he just continues to climb up draft boards, and now he's getting this attention of NFL scouts. So I think as of right now, he'd have to be at least considered in that day three conversation. But there are some concerns about the height, transitioning to the next level. You know, I always have my concerns under 6 feet tall, but there have been exceptions to that rule, and we've seen a lot more shorter signal callers in years past, so he's got a shot.
Updated Heisman Trophy numbers right now. Mendoza, plus 275. Ty Simpson, plus 325. Julian Sain, plus 375. Marcel Reed, Texas A&M, plus 550. Diego Pavia is now 8-1 for the Heisman. Gunnar Stockton, 14-1. Jeremiah Love, 20-1. No love for my guy, even though you got Jeremiah Love there. Justice Haynes has just lived up to the billing. If you want to talk about a badass running back, Justice Haynes at the Michigan Wolverines is just that. Hey, Jordan Marshall isn't bad either. As Michigan, not flashy, but, you know, they're 6-2 now, whatever, 5-2, 6-2. It's like they're chipping away, right? They're chipping away. Like you said, I don't see Ohio State losing either. Except the one team that seems to be in their head is Michigan, right? And it's been 4 years in a row right now, so maybe Michigan can catch them again somehow this year. The game is in Ann Arbor, but it's going to be tough because, man, Ohio State are really good, like Rick is saying here. So before we get you out of here, Rick, NFL football this week. I mentioned the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs is the, you know, the glamour game of the week. We got the Ravens and the Dolphins. Thursday night football, Falcons, Patriots. I will say, man, Drake May has really developed quickly, though, hasn't he?
I love what I see out of Drake May. I love what I mean, look at how bad of a decision it was to fire Mike Vrabel from Tennessee. You think they could wish they had that one back? And what this guy's done now, I mean, New England is going to maybe compete for the AFC East. The turnaround in New England, the development of Drake May. Mike Vrabel is a no-nonsense kind of head coach. I mean, you got to love the direction the New England Patriots are heading in. And they might even add a wide receiver here. Remember, McDaniels was the head coach in the Raiders. He actually signed Jacoby Myers and brought him over to Las Vegas. He's now the OC in New England. So look for Jacoby Myers possibly heading back to the Patriots.
That's interesting because no one likes McDaniels except Myers does. So you're right. It could be that, you know, that mix there. You know, so games of the week. Danny, you know, you and I spoke a lot about Danny Dimes over the years, obviously, Rick, in New York. Yeah, the Colts are rolling right now. They get the Steelers this week. So it's the Colts versus the Steelers. Colts 3-point road favorites.
Yeah, I like the Colts. They're rolling. I mean, I'm believing in Indiana Jones. And while I don't want to put him as one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, I don't have that in me to do that just yet. You can't argue how the guy is playing. He looks like a new man. I don't know. He's drinking from the fountain of youth or what's going on in Indianapolis. A lot of St. Elmo's in his life for the shrimp cocktail. But, I mean, the Jonathan Taylor, he's rejuvenated. They don't have, like, a bona fide number one wide receiver, but Pierce, Pittman, Tyler Warren, like, it's a committee approach. And then they got a stout defense. I mean, the defense is playing well. You got the owner on the sidelines wearing the headsets, taking control. I mean, I like everything Indianapolis is doing. And watch out, because they might just destroy the Steelers.
Last one, Rick, the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City Chiefs, 1.5-point road favorites. The Bills have had success against Kansas City in the regular season. They've lost in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But in the regular season, they have beaten them pretty much every time. They're like 4-1 against them, ironically enough, in the regular season. But they don't beat them when it matters. What's your take on this one?
Yeah, I think the Bills are coming off the bye week, right?
No, they did come off the bye week, and they beat Carolina.
Okay, so, you know, Kansas City, they're just getting hot right now. They're playing so well. I like Kansas City here, but, you know, to your point, Buffalo's played them well in the regular season. Mahomes has taken, I think, every single postseason affair. I like the Chiefs to cover in this one.
Big game for the Kansas City Chiefs. They've sort of battled back, but, this is a big statement one here. As far as the AFC is concerned. But, you know, who would have thought? Hey, at this point, I can't believe it, Rick, but if the playoffs started today, the Indianapolis Colts would be the top seed, just like we all thought 40 years started. Yeah. They'd have the bye.
There you go. A little unpredictability, but, you know, they've been the story of the season so far. And I've always been a fan of Shane Steichen. I loved when he was the offensive coordinator at Philadelphia. And I think he's done a wonderful job. He actually has more control over personnel than people realize. And Steichen has done a great job kind of delegating some of the responsibility to Daniel Jones. If you listen to him talk, like, Daniel Jones has complete freedom at the line of scrimmage to audible, switch out of formations. I mean, he's kind of handed over the keys to the Cadillac to Daniel Jones. So props to Shane Steichen. I think you've got to put Steichen maybe as the front runner for coach of the year, him and Vrabel.
I can't dispute it. As far as Steichen, yeah. And Vrabel's done a great job, too. But if the playoffs started this week in the NFL, the Colts would be the one seed in the AFC and get the bye. The Chiefs would visit New England as a 7-2 matchup. Ooh. I said it's bizarro world. The Chargers would visit Denver, and the Buffalo Bills would go to Pittsburgh in the opening round of the NFL playoffs. In the NFC, the Green Bay Packers, with their 5-1-1 record now. See, the tie is better than a loss. They're the one seed right now. San Francisco would visit Philadelphia. LA Rams at Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Detroit Lions at Seattle Seahawks. As of right now, that's the NFL playoff picture. Rick Saratella, All Access Football. .com, NFL Draft Bible. Always a great time, Rick, talking football with you. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Appreciate you, fellas.
There's Rick Saratella with us. Great football conversation. We really ran the gauntlet there. College football, CFL football, NFL football. Of course, that man, that World Series game last night just went on and on and on and on. It tied a record. Ironically enough, the Dodgers went 18 innings in 2018. And beat the Boston Red Sox in 18 innings, but ended up losing the series for the record. So they beat the Red Sox. So the Dodgers have now played in the two longest World Series games ever. So last night we go 18 innings, 6 hours and 39 minutes. And our boy Andrew McCanis, people throw the term East Coast around loosely, but McCanis lives on the eastest of East Coasts, pretty much. And in a very strange time zone, McKinnis. So what time did the game go for you? Like, it was like 4:30 in the morning? The game was still going?
Yeah, I was up till 4 in the morning. My girlfriend was getting up to go work in healthcare in about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I still hadn't gone to bed yet. I mean, she's like, what the hell are you doing out there? I'm like, the game is still going on. We're making history here. And then I come to bed pretty upset and sad about 5 minutes later, and we find out the Blue Jays lost. But it was 4:30 in the morning. And it was 5:15 Newfoundland time. That's even Easter from me. So you got to love that. So I love seeing people complain about the time zones. And I also think that my statement last night that I always make to West Coasters that sports were meant to be played at night kind of backfired on me, because the sport ran right into the morning. So it was a bit tough. But Gabe, I'm usually a night owl. You know that. I used to do shows with you into the deep night. But I'm on my third coffee already, and it's 1 o'clock for me right now.
And here we go again tonight. Like, the game is already feels like it's in a couple hours already. There was basically 17 hours, less than 17 hours after the game ended last night.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices. With beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale. Right.
And you know what's crazy, too? So Ohtani's pitching, but Ohtani played last night. And Ohtani, Japanese players sleep a lot. Like Ohtani, I saw Ohtani basically said he likes to sleep 14 hours a night if he can. And he's not going to be able to. There's 17-hour difference here. So Ohtani's going to be thrown off his loop. I remember Kikuchi when he was on the Jays. Kikuchi said after a game once, he said, "Oh, I was kind of tired today. I only slept 12 hours." And people,
I remember that. Like,
yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah. And people said, "Yeah, you only slept." And he goes, "Yeah, I usually sleep 16 before I pitch."
He was dead serious.
He was dead serious. He goes, "I'm tired. I only got 12 hours sleep." Yeah. And like, so I thought about that with Ohtani, actually, Andrew, right away, because it's a Japanese thing. They sleep a lot. Like, and imagine if you're like that, you know, Ohtani, everyone wonders, how does he do it? He sleeps all the time. He literally does. Like, Ohtani sleeps like 12, 14 hours a day, but this is a tough one. You know what I mean? I mean, he can't 17 hours, less than 17 hours in between. It's going to take him 2 hours to get back to Orange County, another 2 hours to get back to the stadium. So we'll see. Ohtani's going to be on like an 8 hour sleep tonight, which isn't really normal for him. We'll see if mental exhaustion kicks in as well. But that was a devastating loss for the Blue Jays last night, Cam. You go 18 innings, those are one of those games, like Derek Jeter said after. I said it's like hockey, McInnes, right?
Yep.
Once you get into that triple and quadruple overtime stuff, you can't lose. It's like because you're so gassed. The loser's going to be just like, you got to be kidding me. You could have heard a pin drop in the Blue Jay room after the game last night. Like, it was stone cold, like, silence. There wasn't a song. There wasn't anyone talking. It was... And Derek Jeter has been around a long time, and he's seen it all. And Jeter said, like, "I've been in games like that." And he said, mostly on the winning side, but he goes, "I've got to tell you, it's devastating to be a baseball team to lose a game like that." You used every pitcher.
Like, yep.
Yeah.
You've injured players. Like, it's devastating to lose a game like that.
That Dodgers room, though, that was pretty pumped up. Did you guys see Ohtani? Ohtani started dancing around, and then he started pretending he was pitching in the locker room when they said, "And our guy's going tomorrow." They said he got on base like double-digit times, and now he's pitching tomorrow night. But you brought up Derek Jeter, Gabe. One thing that Jeter did say that as a Blue Jays fan I did appreciate, he said, "I don't care who you are, how many times you walked, how good of a game you had, or you know how great of an athlete you are." You just mentioned it. He did say that he thinks it's going to affect Ohtani quite a bit. So as much as he talked about a demoralizing loss for the Blue Jays, he thought that, yes, this guy's a freak of nature. He's the top guy on the planet. It's got to affect him going over from playing that game and then going to pitch tomorrow night. So Derek Jeter, he kind of threw that out there. He says, "Guys, I don't know what kind of Ohtani we're going to get. He looked pretty happy in the dressing room, but it's a little bit different when you show up the next day ready to pitch."
It's going to be adrenaline. It's going to be adrenaline. Now, I can't believe, too, you look at Yamamoto. Yamamoto just threw 105 pitches on Saturday night, went to complete game, and actually volunteered to pitch last night. And he was in the bullpen. He told them, "I'm in. Like, if you need me, I'm doing this." And he went to the bullpen on his own to warm up. You know, Kershaw coming in with the bases loaded was just money. The Will Klein pitching four innings. Will Klein said after the game, they said, "When's the last time you pitched four innings?" He said, "Junior college." Like, he said, "Oh, when I was a junior in college." Like, he said, "I was a starter in college." In Major League Baseball, he had never pitched more than two innings before.
He was impressive.
They threw him out there. Like, he's only had 23 Major League Baseball appearances. They threw him out there, right? But he kind of was facing a diluted lineup because the Blue Jays took everybody out of the damn baseball game. So that's, you know, that's the thing. So what's your pick tonight, Cam? You got Bieber on the hill versus Ohtani.
I don't know, Gabe. I got to be honest with you. I hit the over, had the plus 1.5, lost money line. I'm betting the Jays every game in this series, but I'm very concerned. I don't think Springer is going to play. I'm worried about Kirk's injury, as you mentioned. And Big John Studd's got to get not a quick trigger finger with all this stuff. He's lucky that Lauer went extra innings and stuff, but that's what this guy does. I think you brought up an excellent point. A lot of the time he overmanages the game, and if it does go deep, then you got problems with guys that are being taxed. But I think the Blue Jays can get it done. Bieber's going to have a special performance. And to what you and McInnes mentioned, Ohtani's got to be out of his rhythm after that crazy long game last night. But very impressive performance with his bat, too, and reaching base 9 times, record. Like, this guy is just a freak. I told Blue Jay fans not to poke the bear, but this guy's fired up, and he'll probably do well. Because that's all he does is perform.
From a fatigue factor, it's wild to have 9 plate appear, 9 get on base 9 times.
Exactly.
So, like, all the times he ran the bases and, you know, that he swung the bat, and now having the pitch is just absolutely insane. But he is a freak, and he can, like Jeter was saying, even Jeter's doubting him, McInnes. So I said it last night, too. I said, listen, his legacy is his legacy already, this guy, but imagine if he pitches a gem tonight after, like, and we all know, like, the circumstances that he's in right now. It'll just, like, you know, build a statue of him now. Like, what can you say? Then you get, you know, to me, one other thing I did not understand is they had Bieber in the bullpen last night. I don't know why Bieber was in the stadium. Now, I guess they nearly pitched him, I guess, and, they, you know, it was that crazy last night. But I would have had Bieber back at the hotel last night. Historically, generally, that's what they do, right? The pitcher will travel ahead, or the pitcher will be alone in the hotel the night before getting rest. This game was going on all night. There was no reason for Bieber. Like I said, so yeah, Ohtani was there, but so was Bieber for whatever reason. So Bieber, like, yeah, he wasn't playing, but Bieber didn't get him, you know, any extra sleep, or Bieber was at the stadium for the game, which I don't really understand personally, but that's me. So Bieber's strikeout prop tonight is 4.5, over under 4.5. Ohtani's strikeout prop is over under 6.5. I'm throwing this out there for you prop players out there that I'm going to be betting the over with both pitchers' strikeout props tonight due to the fact that both teams don't have any pitchers to use as relief pitchers. They both used everybody. Like, this is it. This is, like, and it's another thing. This is one of these games where it's like, all right, Bieber, whatever happens, like, they're going to tell him, like, if you give up 6 runs, we're leaving you in the game. You know what I mean? We don't have an option. There's no options. What are you going to do? So, yeah, you can use a couple of guys here and there and stuff, but you got to play again tomorrow. Like, you're going to run out of arms. Like, so they're going to pray that both teams are going to, and the Dodgers are in the same boat. Right. The Dodgers are going to pray that Ohtani can go like 6 innings, 7 innings. Right. Same with the same with the Blue Jays. So, like, I'm just saying, like, sometimes they gave up 3 runs or something. The hook is going to be longer tonight due to the fact that they don't have any arms to replace them with. So let's go over 4.5 strikeouts. And I wouldn't be surprised as well that it's not easy to bat 9 times. Like, guys were getting hurt. Like, Springer twisted something. Kirk hurt himself at the plate. Ohtani was hurting himself running on the base path. They're not used to playing that much. These guys swing the bat violently nowadays, guys. Ohtani hits the ball 119 miles an hour. Like, when he swings, when a big league player swings now, man, there's a lot. It's like golf. There's a lot of tendons, and there's a lot of back things that are, like, in motion here. And you saw Springer, right away. Right? Like, so I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised if guys were kind of lazy at the plate tonight, too. They're going to be swinging at everything. They're going to – fatigue's going to kick in for the hitter at some point. I think their bats are going to be a step slow. So I like the strikeout prop for both pitchers tonight. Bieber over 4.5. Ohtani over 6.5. And we've murdered this as far as the props that we gave you guys. I gave you will there be a complete game in the series by any pitcher? Yes, plus 1,400. There was already with Yamamoto. And we gave you Shohei Ohtani over 2.5 home runs hit in the World Series at plus 160. That has already hit. So we've already given you some nice plus money. Plus money wins. And we gave you Kareem Hunt, first touchdown scored a game last night, 16-1. We got lucky with that one. So some nice big wins as of late. McInnes, what's your pick tonight? Blue Jays and Dodgers.
My pick is going to be to hope that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Pretends he's playing against the New York Yankees. Because you know what? Nobody is saying this. The guy got a couple walks and scored some runs. I don't think Vladdy is playing the best this series, and I could use him. The team could use him, I think, in a couple of these big moments. Look at all the guys that were on the lineup last night. I mean, it was the Buffalo Bisons for half the game. They needed one of their big dogs to get a big run, a big home run or a big swing. Didn't really get it. All jokes aside, I'm just a little bit surprised. I haven't heard that, but I like the over 3.5 runs plus 120 for the Blue Jays. You guys know I've really adopted these team totals, but more importantly, I think that the Toronto Blue Jays could very well get to 4 runs here in this contest and end up losing the game. So, and to avoid, you know, taking the Blue Jays on the money line, but to think that they're going to be able to get to a fatigued Ohtani, or once he does finally leave the game, get to that bullpen, I think it could happen. And I think that you're going to see this team get on base again. It's just about bringing the runners in. And you talked about the guys being aggressive at the plate, Gabe. I think they might be a little more patient. I think last night they were aggressive. I think that they were not patient enough. I mean, those guys in extra innings, they did not play Blue Jays baseball. They did not play, I think, small ball whatsoever. Like, it seemed like ever since it went to extra innings, and nobody can predict how many innings it's going to go to, but every single batter went up there trying to hit a moon bomb, you know, and those guys,
that's the modern,
they're not capable of doing it, but those guys,
modern baseball.
But the difference is that look at the Blue Jays lineup, you know, those guys that were left in there, like Miles Straw and
Jimenez. It's the opposite, McInnes, though. Those guys that were left in there aren't capable of stringing together 3 or 4 hits.
Yeah, that's true.
They almost need the home run. You know what I mean? Yep. It's harder. Like,
yeah, I get it.
I don't like it. It is what it is. The Dodgers were in the same mode. Like, and it finally, it took forever to do it, but look at Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman literally hit like 3 shots to the same spot that he did last night, right?
Yeah.
And it finally went out. He said after, he goes, I wasn't sure. He goes, I hit a bunch of them to the same place. He goes, I didn't know if it was going to go out this time or not. I kind of gave up on it leaving the park. Will Smith, same thing. Will Smith was trying to hit a home run. I don't like it, McInnes, but it is what it is. That's modern baseball now. When they get in extra innings, man, and without the ghost runner, it's basically, all right, everybody try to hit a home run. And yeah, somebody, you know, I tweeted it out. I said, next home run wins.
100%.
Yeah, that's what it is. Next home run wins.
Nobody thought it would take 10 innings, though.
No. No. But, man, both teams hit a lot of deep shots to the wall last night.
Oh, yeah. Warning track was crazy last night, especially the Dodgers, man. Like, every shot, I'm like, oh, that's gone. Warning track, power, marine layer. But, you guys, I don't know how things are going to go tonight. There's so many question marks too, Gabe, with Ohtani and with the Blue Jays injuries. But I'll tell you one thing, whatever that happens, when these teams get together, it's going to be fireworks one way or the other. It's been a wild World Series.
Now, the series is definitely on the line. The Dodgers win tonight. The Blue Jays are toast.
I would think so.
Just point blank. They're going to be down 3-1, and the Dodgers have another crack at it tomorrow, and then they'd have 2 more games in Toronto after, only needing 1 more win. This is a must win for the Toronto Blue Jays tonight. If they don't, and listen, historically too, I've said this before, the Dodgers, it never lines up for the Dodgers to win at home. The Dodgers have not won a World Series at Dodger Stadium since 1963. And they've been in a lot of World Series before, since 1963, okay? And they've never won on their home field. So if the Blue Jays just win 1 game in L.A., the Dodgers don't win on their home field. But if they win today, if the Dodgers win tonight, the Dodgers know the World Series is in the building, the trophy's in the house here, and they could actually win and win it in L.A. for the first time. You know they'd love to do that. All right, we'll wrap things up with some NHL hockey. McInnes, I know you already went over all the games today, so we'll get your thoughts on Tuesday night's card. Looking at the trends so far in the NHL, now that the season is starting to roll on a little bit here, favorites are still doing well. 84-47 11-6. So favorites have won 56.8% of the time. Road favorites are 32-19-6-1. Road favorites have won 55.2% of the time. Home favorites are the best one. Home favorites are 57.8% winners. So home favorites are 52-28-5-5 so far in the National Hockey League. As far as totals are concerned, we've had 72 overs and 67 unders, 51.8% over, 48.2% under so far to start the season. We got a bunch of games Tuesday night in the NHL. What are you looking at, McInnes, on Tuesday night?
You mentioned those favorites, Gabe, and I'll start with the first game of the night here, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. I understand that right now in the NHL, it's a ride the hot and fade the cold. Seems as simple as can be. But sometimes, I've been adopting, kind of more reading the market. And last week, I believe I gave us a pretty good upset. It was Pittsburgh over Vancouver. Well, this isn't really an upset. This is actually just fading a hot team. And I'm going to take Philadelphia to get the job done. I'm going to take them over 3.5 goals. I mean, you got to wonder why the number opened up at minus 150, and now some spots are showing 165. When Pittsburgh's playing as well as they have, I think that Philadelphia is a team that's going to turn things around a bit more offensively, and Pittsburgh might feel the implications of that second half of back-to-back. So they're a hot team. They're plus money. But I ask myself, why'd that number open the way it is? And I kind of think that Philadelphia is a team that we can get behind. Calgary, Toronto, I like over 5.5. You guys know how it is let's say, a shooter in basketball, finally seeing the ball go through the basket, someone finally getting off the schneid, getting their first home run when they've been in a little bit of a slump. Well, Calgary had the league's worst shooting percentage on all shot attempts. 2.02% of their shots were going in the net, dead last in the whole league. Well, they finally get a win. They finally find the net, and they finally get 5 goals, albeit against the Rangers. You get that confidence and that swagger back. I think over 5.5 against Toronto. I have not been impressed with Toronto's defense whatsoever. We've got one game here that I like quite a bit, which is Vegas, Carolina. Carolina had a tough end of their road trip. They had to play some really, really tough teams. You had to play against the Dallas Stars, of course, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Avalanche. That's not easy, but now they're playing at home where they play their best hockey. This is a Hurricanes team that's on the last of the probably only a couple teams that I really care about home ice for. There's not a lot of teams in the NHL that I really care if they're playing at home, and I would say Carolina is one of them. So I do like that rapid revenge spot for them against the Vegas Golden Knights. And one I wanted to go to was in the late night hours, New York Rangers, Vancouver Canucks. You've got JT Miller returning to play in Vancouver. Going to be a very emotional game. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and take the New York Rangers to get the job done. There's trouble right now in Vancouver. I think this team's given up goals. They're having trouble pulling together a full 60 minutes. I think the Rangers get the job done tonight in the West Coast.
Vancouver, too, has been a problem for them for the past couple of years, where the Canucks are a better road team than they are a home team. As you stated, there's trouble in Vancouver. The fans are always very negative. The media is very negative in Vancouver. And it trickles down to the club all the time. Like, you look, they went on the road. They won the first three games on the road. No love lost between JT Miller, the fan base, Pettersson. So, yeah, this is sort of a gut check type game. And the Canucks always lose games like this. They've been shaky. Right, whatever, man. The Canucks have been the definition of a 500 hockey team, like right down the middle. They're 5-5. They're 5-5 against the spread. They're 5-3-2 with the totals. But you look at their goal differential, 29-31. Like, they're just the epitome of a 500 hockey club right now. They've been unable to string together anything, especially at home. Like I said, a couple of wins on the road. Canadians are in Seattle tonight. Great start to the season for the Canadians. They're in Seattle tonight. What do you think of the Canadians game, McInnes?
I worry a bit about this game, Gabe, with it being the last game of their road trip. I do. Youngest team in the NHL still. They're playing extremely well. 7-3 their first 10 games. You can't ask for a better start than that. And it is interesting how many times already this season we've seen some of these teams play the same team twice, although they're in complete different conferences. We've already seen these two teams go at it, and it was a really good one. It was a 5-4 overtime finish in Montreal at the Bell Center. I'll tell you one thing that I've changed my mind on. that I used to think last game of a road trip leads to overs. One thing I've been looking at more now is last game of road trips looking towards unders. It's almost like at last game, all right, let's get through it here. Let's play a good defensive game. Let's get out of here and, you know, show some pride defensively. Not as much that pep in your step Saturday night, hockey night in Canada. You know, let's have a huge performance. I kind of lean towards the under in this one. The last meeting was 5-4. This meeting, I think we're going to see more of a clogged up neutral zone. I don't think Seattle wants to go goal for goal with my Habs. And I can't believe I'm saying that because this Canadiens team finally has depth. Ivan Demidov looks like the real deal. Right now, Kapanen has been playing very well. Some of the secondary guys. So I think this game has underwritten all over it. I think Seattle at their core, they don't want to be trading goals with anybody. So I do lean towards the under. I want to mention another back-to-back game, home and home, is Devils and Avalanche. And I know we always joke that I'm an Avalanche homer here with MacKinnon and stuff, but it's another back-to-back kind of revenge spot, similar to Vegas and Carolina. You got Blackwood making his first start potentially of the season. We always think when it's a rookie goaltender or a guy making his first start or someone coming back from an injury in a sport, teams rally behind that. You get Colorado getting back home. I think we look towards the under team total for the New Jersey Devils. I think Colorado, if they want to get back, they've lost four straight games, man. I mean, we can't ignore it. Colorado has lost four straight games. I think they get back on track defensively. So Devils team total under 2.5 is kind of a lean for me. And then the last one I wanted to throw at you guys, Washington, Dallas, two teams that are more than capable. Dallas is a tough team for Washington to go and bounce back against after that game they had against Ottawa. But don't you think, Gabe, that after a vet team like Washington gets embarrassed and puts up 7 goals on them, that we see a defensive game next time out? I think Washington's going to be super frustrated and probably just want to have the best defensive effort they can have.
Cam, your hockey picks tonight?
I agree with a lot of things MacInnis has. I'm going to take the Leafs. I'll take them in regulation against Calgary. Calgary got that win on the road. At home against the Rangers. Also, my pooch of the night, guys, I'm looking at the Chicago Blackhawks. Ottawa smoked Boston the other night. I think the Blackhawks getting close to +120 might be a look tonight as Ottawa. I think they come down to earth and Chicago gets a home win tonight. But MacInnis, I love your picks. I'm on almost everything the same on your sides.
All right, MacInnis, before we get you out of here, nice win for your Packers in the Aaron Rodgers Bowl. Yeah. I was on the Packers. CFL football, CFL playoffs are here. And good call by MacInnis in the offseason for identifying the massive number for the Calgary Stampeders to win the Grey Cup. Are they going to win the Grey Cup? No. But you know what? You got them at a massive number right now. They get BC this week. You got Montreal and Winnipeg. What do you like in the CFL, MacInnis, this week?
First game, Gabe, I like the over, 49.5. I think that Winnipeg started to look a little bit more like their true defensive selves toward the end of the season, but it was some lighter competition, maybe some meetings against teams that it wasn't that motivated for, and they weren't getting up for it. I think Winnipeg has struggled defensively this time around. Montreal, when healthy, has been unbelievable. How about Davis Alexander in that receiving core? I think that one gets up and over the numbers. So I think that one I'll mainly focus on the total. And Calgary, BC, give me the favorite. When it ultimately comes down to it, I just want to target a weakness for the Calgary Stampeders. They are the second worst team in the league in passing yards allowed per game. 269.8 passing yards allowed per game. Only other team in the league worse than them, the Edmonton Elks. So I think when I look at the BC scores and how they've stacked up against this team, the last two meetings between these clubs, 52-23 and 38-24 for the BC Lions. BC has struggled in postseasons recently because their offense has gotten them there, but their defense hasn't been able to step up. But I think their offense will do enough to win them this game against Calgary.
Yeah, I think this game's going to be a track meet. And we'll see if their defense can do enough against the Rough Riders the following week. But I think it's going to be a track meet in Vancouver on Saturday. The total is 53.5 right now, and I would expect it to go up by game time. There's a lot of stuff going on in the sports world right now. So, see, even in Canada, Canadians really haven't pulled the trigger on the CFL games yet. I we'll see. You mark my words. By Friday night, we'll be like, oh, damn, look, it's 55.5 now, or 56, the total. So if you're going to bet the total, probably a good idea to bet it earlier in the week. Andrew MacInnis, wagertalk.com. Check him out. And he does a nightly show at 10 o'clock Eastern as well. Cam, we'll see you Actually, I was going to say I'll see you on Sports Grid, but I guess you'll be on Wednesday night. I will not. I'm going to be at the Dodger game. I'm going to game five. So no podcast tomorrow, guys, actually, because I'll be traveling. So no podcast Wednesday, no podcast Thursday. Unfortunately, guys, just the way that it works out, it's basically morning to morning. I'll get
rush
back.
It on Friday, Gabe.
I'll be back Thursday afternoon, hopefully, and right into the Thursday night football game type of deal. I'm just doing like a literally like less than 24-hour trip there. So thanks, Cam. Thanks, McInnes. And
enjoy your trip.
I appreciate it. Thank you to everybody that tuned in. Yeah, hopefully, like I said, I'm hoping that the part of me, if I'm going to be there, I might as well see the Dodgers win, right? So it'd be cool if they win tonight and it sets it up that they could win the World Series tomorrow. Yet, L.A.'s crazy when teams win championships. Like, there's going to be, not riots, but there's going to be action. We'll put it that way. And the streets are going to be closed and stuff. Like, and I got to get back to my hotel. So I'm sort of already concerned about everything. I'm like, oh, God, this is just going to be a circus, man. Like, I'm screwed no matter what I do, like, basically tomorrow. So it is what it is. But enjoy the game, everybody, tonight. Crazy, crazy World Series we've got going on. Tonight's the series, man. I'm telling you, if the Dodgers win tonight, this series is over. Like, it's game, set, match. Blue Jays are not coming back from three games down to one. If the Blue Jays win, then we got a series. Like, the Blue Jays have two more games at home in their back pocket. If they stole tomorrow, they would go back home 3-2. So another pivotal game tonight in the World Series. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices with beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale.
Right. Coda salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of Coda's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use Coda Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on Coda. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.